Chapter 14. The next day was overcast, with a heavy blanket of clouds blocking the sun. The tournament to celebrate my birthday was to be held in the field where Father and his knights usually practiced with their swords and lances. Carpenters had taken over the field weeks before, building stands for the crowd that would come to watch and setting up tents for the competing knights. The wooden barrier that ran the length of the tilting field and divided the field in two was also ready, its frame draped with colorful fabric. Since I hadn't seen Edric in the castle, I assumed he was getting ready for his first run against someone called the Black Knight. It had become fashionable for a knight to choose a color for his armor, then claim that color for his name during the tournament. Edric's color was silver, which looked wonderful when he was on his white horse. Although I had met most of the competing knights, I didn't know which colors they had chosen. With their helmets closed and their faces covered, I had no way of telling until after they'd competed and removed their helmets. I was on my way to the field, hoping to see Edric before the games began, when I saw my grandmother chatting with Oculura and her sister Dyspepsia. Olafat the dog was also there, sniffing the hems of their gowns. As I approached the tents closest to the castle, I spotted Grisina scurrying toward the moat. She was carrying something in her arms, but I couldn't tell what it was from a distance. The herald's trumpet blared just as I started toward my aunt. King Limelin has declared that all lances must be blunted for this tournament, announced the herald. Any knight using a pointed lance will be disqualified. My father always ordered the blunting of lances, though even blunted lances could deliver powerful blows. I'd been so preoccupied with the curse that I hadn't thought about Edric's safety, and suddenly I was worried. The competition was dangerous, and so was the threat of the unknown magic that my grandmother and Oculura had mentioned. I decided to do something about it. Nothing that would help Edric win, because I knew he wouldn't stand for that. Just something that would keep him from getting hurt. I found a quiet spot behind two of the tents where no one would see what I was doing, and reached into my purse. There wasn't much inside that was suitable, but I found a small coin that would do. Holding the coin in one hand, I recited a health and safety charm. Keep the wearer of this charm safe from any kind of harm. Keep the wearer healthy, too. Bring him back as good as new. The coin glowed bright orange for a second, then faded to its original copper. When it was dull again, I took a scarf I'd intended to give to Edric as a token of my favor and tied the coin in one of the corners. I'd give it to him as soon as I saw him. The festive atmosphere surrounding tournaments always attracted people from all over. Some came to compete, some to watch, and others to make money. Wandering minstrels, jugglers, and merchants selling food and trinkets all vied for the attention of anyone passing by. This tournament seemed to be especially popular, with commoners and nobles traveling all the way from Edric's kingdom of Upper Monte Vista. I wandered through the growing crowd looking for Edric. Instead, I ran into Haywood, who was listening to a minstrel's song about an enchanted prince. "It's not like that at all," Haywood said when he saw me. "But you would know what I mean, having been a frog. Everyone thinks that when you're turned into an animal, you pine away for your human life. You don't, though. You get used to being an animal pretty quickly. It takes a lot longer to remember how to be a human when you turn back. I still don't have it mastered, and it's been more than a year." "You were an otter for so long," I said. "That's true. I'm sure it'll just take time. Let's go see Grisina and finish this. I don't like being around crowds anymore." We found Grisina by the moat near where I'd seen her before. She was staring down into the water, muttering to herself with her long, straggly hair hanging down around her face. Her cloak lay on the ground beside her, covering something large and lumpy. "Aunt Grisina," I said, "there's someone here to see you." She turned her head abruptly and peered up at Haywood through her curtain of hair.
"What does he want?" she growled.
He just wants to talk to you.
Well, I don't want to talk to him.
Heywood cleared his throat and said, Hello, Grisina. How have you been?
Good, since you left. Why don't you leave again so I can be even better?
There's no need to be like that, Grisina, he said. We really haven't talked in a long time and
not nearly long enough. Can't you see I'm busy with matters more important than talking to a brainless nit like you?
What are you doing, Aunt Grisina? I asked.
Nothing, she snarled.
Now go away and let me do it some more. What is that? If anyone was going to ill-use magic at the tournament, it was bound to be Grisina. I reached for her cloak, but she slapped my hand aside.
Keep your hands to yourself if you don't want to lose them, she said, spitting out the words.
Aunt Grisina, I tried one more time, I found out how to end the curse.
What curse? You mean being cursed with rotten relatives who won't leave you alone? Or cursed with nincompoops who have smaller brains than fleas do and don't know when to quit? What do I have to do to get rid of you two? I'd turn into a lizard and eat you both if I wasn't so busy. Now leave me alone before I turn you into worms and toss you into the moat. I'm not too busy for that.
But Aunt Grisina...
Now!
She barked, pointing a finger at us as she began to mutter a spell. I could have counteracted any spell she tried on me, but that wouldn't make her any nicer. Remembering the wording of the curse, I was sure a forced kiss wouldn't do any good. The way Grisina was acting, there wouldn't be any other kind. Let's go, Heywood, I said, hustling him away from my aunt. We'll come back when she's in a better mood.
I'm in a wonderful mood now, you ninny, my aunt shouted as we hurried toward the tilting field, because you two are leaving.
We didn't stop until we reached the first of the tents, and Heywood turned to me to say,
It's no use, Emma. I wouldn't be able to get close enough to that woman to kiss her even if I wanted to. The only reason I was willing to try was to help you and Edric, and that probably wasn't enough to break the curse anyway. I'm sorry, Emma. I'm going home.
I was feeling desperate. After everything I had gone through, the curse was as strong as ever. Are you sure, Heywood? You know she acts like that because of the curse. That wasn't the real Grisina back there. Maybe it would be different next time.
Heywood shook his head. She seemed real enough to me. You know she's not going to change.
Goodbye, Emma. You and Edric should come visit me sometime.
I headed toward the stands, feeling more dejected than I'd ever felt before. I dreaded having to tell Edric that I couldn't marry him after all. Even worse, I was going to have to live with an aunt who was getting nastier by the day. If only Grisina could have been nice for just a few minutes. I glanced back and saw my aunt bending down, pouring something from a big jug into the water. She's up to something, I thought, and turned around. By the time I reached the moat, however, Grisina had already gathered her cloak and jug and scuttled off toward the drawbridge. Kneeling beside the water, I tried to peer into its depths, but all I saw were green bubbles rising to the surface. I was considering using a spell to call up whatever Grisina had put in there when I heard the strident notes of the herald's trumpets above the clamor of the crowd. I sighed and brushed off my skirts, knowing that I'd have to figure out what Grisina had done later. The tournament was about to start, and Edric was in the first round. I found my seat in the stands between my mother and Queen Frizella. Mother nodded approvingly at the yellow gown I wore, one of the new ones she'd had the seamstress make while I was in the past. Queen Frizella gave me a half-hearted smile, but she seemed too worried to be enjoying herself.
I hate tournaments, she said. Someone always gets hurt. At least body no longer competes.
She patted her husband's hand where it rested on the arm of his chair beside her. I wondered how the portly little man had ever fit into a suit of armor. He smiled at his wife reassuringly, then turned back to the approaching knights. Dressed in silver armor, Edric rode Bright Country, who pranced alongside the Black Knight's all-black charger as if he was having a wonderful time.
If only Edric would stop competing, said his mother.
There, there, my dear, said King Bottoman. It's good for the boy, and before you know it, Bradston here will be ready.
The king patted the head of a boy about 10 years old, seated at his other side.
Princess Emeralda, said the king, this is our younger son, Bradston.
The boy smiled at his father, but the king had already looked away, so he didn't notice that the smile dissolved into a scowl as Bradston smoothed his hair back into place. Sticking his tongue out at me, he rolled his eyes up in his head and shoved back the tip of his nose with one finger so he looked like a pig. I'd heard about Edric's younger brother. It was because of Bradston that Edric had met the witch who'd turned him into a frog.
It's nice to meet you, Prince Bradston, I said.
For the first time in my life, I was glad that I was an only child.
You'll have to excuse Brad the Brat, said a voice, and I looked up to see Edric smiling at me from Bright Country's back. He usually falls asleep during the lessons on courtly manners.
I smiled and reached into my purse for the scarf. This is for you, I said, handing it to Edric. He grinned and tucked it under the neck of his armor.
Thank you, my lady. I shall wear your token by my heart.
Bradston made a rude noise, which we all pretended not to hear. Wondering who Edric was competing against, I glanced at the Black Knight, but his visor covered his face. After saluting both royal couples, the knights turned their horses and trotted down the field, taking up their positions at opposite ends of the tilting barrier. I sat up straighter when trumpets blared, and the herald announced,
"The Silver Knight shall ride against the Black Knight!"
Then held my breath when they lowered their lances and charged.
I'd never seen Edric joust before, although I had seen him fight a monstrous spider with his sword.
He had told me that he was good with a lance as well, but I didn't know how good until he charged down that field. His back straight, his lance poised, his horse's hooves pounding the turf, Edric looked like the kind of knight in shining armor that every princess dreams about. He was perfect for me, so perfect that he made my heart ache. I'd still have to tell him that I couldn't marry him. I gasped when the knights' lances slammed into their opponents' armor. Both lances splintered and the knights rode on, unharmed. They rode again with fresh lances in their hands. Once again, the lances splintered, the sound of the impacts making me wince. On the third round, the Black Knight's lance splintered and broke while Edric's held firm, knocking his opponent off his saddle. The Black Knight landed on his back with a thud that shook the ground and made my heart skip a beat. Although I was rooting for Edric, I bit my lip until the Black Knight stirred and some eager squires helped him to his feet. I hated seeing anyone get hurt. I glanced at Queen Frizella. Her face was pale and beads of perspiration had formed on her upper lip. "Edric will be fine," I said, thinking of my health and safety charm.
"If only I knew that for certain," said his mother.
Although I was tempted to tell her about the charm, I didn't dare because I didn't know how much Edric had told her about me. Given a choice, I'd rather not be the one to inform her that I was a witch. While Edric trotted off to wait for his next turn, the Red Knight rode up to take his place. To everyone's surprise, another knight in silver armor forced his way past the milling squires, taking up the opposite position. When the herald approached, the noise of the crowd died away.
"You may announce me as the Silver Knight," said the new arrival.
"You can't be the Silver Knight," said the herald. "We already have one. There's only one of a color allowed per tournament, so you'll have to go."
"And if I come back in another color?"
asked the knight,
his voice muffled by his lowered visor. "That would be fine," said the herald. Turning his gray charger back the way he'd come, the knight rode off the field just as the blue knight arrived. A large man, he looked imposing in his deep blue armor astride his chestnut steed. However, after the second round, he, too, lay flat on his back, staring up at the sky. The blue knight had scarcely been helped from the field when the knight on the gray charger was back. Armored in black, he rode into position and waited for the herald to announce him. Once again, the crowd fell silent as the herald approached the knight.
"You can't wear that color either," said the herald. "We've already had a black knight. You're going to have to find a color no one else has claimed."
"But I don't have any other armor with me," protested the knight.
The herald shrugged.
"The court armorer might have something you can borrow."
The knight leaned forward and tried to speak in a confidential tone, although I could still hear him.
"Are you sure I can't wear this?"
he asked the herald.
"I hate wearing borrowed armor. You never know who's worn it or if it's been properly cleaned."
"Sorry, Sir Knight," said the herald. "Rules are rules. I'm sure one of the young lads would be happy to show you the way."
"If I must," grumbled the knight,
yanking the reins so his horse reared up and the herald was forced to jump aside. When it was time for Edric to ride again, Bright Country pranced to his place at the end of the tilting barrier, obviously enjoying himself. I was expecting the gold knight when the knight on the gray horse returned. His armor was an unusual color, a mix of brown and purple. This time an expectant murmur ran through the crowd as the herald approached him.
"Now that's a different color," said the herald, smiling broadly. "How do you want me to announce you?"
"As the purple knight, of course," said the knight.
"But that's not purple,"
offered a squire standing nearby.
"This is ridiculous," said the knight. "I don't care what you call it. Just announce me."
The herald grinned.
"Whatever you say, Sir Knight."
The herald sounded his trumpet once more, then shouted,
"Lords and ladies, gentlemen and gentlewomen, the Puce Knight!"
Shouts of laughter rocked the stands. Pennants waved in the air as the squires holding them chortled and guffawed. Apparently, this angered the Puce Knight. He spurred his horse until the silk covering its flanks tore and blood trickled. Rounding the end of the tilt barrier, he took up his position and waited, his lance aimed and ready. Once again, I held my breath as Edric rode into position. When the trumpet sounded, the two horses charged, their hooves thundering in unison. The lances hit with resounding thwacks, and both knights flew off their horses, landing on their backs in the dust. I jumped to my feet, but I couldn't see through the press of bodies that had quickly surrounded Edric. Some men helped the Puce Knight stand, and I began to worry when Edric didn't stand as well.
"Sit down, Emeralda," said my mother. "The men will see to him."
"But why isn't he standing yet?" I said. "He should be up by now."
With a sigh and a soft thump, Edric's mother fainted. Everyone rushed to help her, so no one noticed when I slipped under the railing and ran to Edric. I was nearly there when the Puce Knight reached him. Edric lay on his back, the Puce Knight's lance protruding from his armor. Someone had already removed Edric's helmet, and I could see the pallor of his face beneath his sweat-matted hair. The crowd was muttering about pointed lances when the Puce Knight grabbed hold of the lance and pulled it free. Edric groaned and lifted his head.
"What happened?" he asked.
The Puce Knight raised his lance and slammed it into Edric's armor. We heard a strange twanging sound, and the lance bounced back. Edric looked bewildered, but he didn't seem the least bit hurt. Two of the men standing nearby restrained the Puce Knight, while others helped Edric to his feet.
"Let me see that,"
Edric said, grabbing the lance from the Puce Knight's hands.
"Emma,"
he called, looking for me in the crowd. When people turned and saw me, they moved aside and let me through.
"What do you make of this?"
he asked, showing me the lance. It was sharpened, just as I'd thought, but that wasn't all. Holding my hand over the lance, I could feel the magic surrounding it. Someone has strengthened the point with a spell.
The point, huh? Said Edric. Then let's see what this does.
Taking the lance in both hands, he slammed the shaft against his armor-clad knee, breaking it neatly in two.
Now, let's see who's hiding behind this helmet.
The puce knight struggled to get away, but two burly men held him tightly as Edric lifted the helmet from the knight's head. I gasped when I saw his face. It was Prince Jorge, the son of the king who had led the invasion of Greater Greensward the previous summer, and the man my mother had wanted me to marry before I met Edric.
Jorge, I said.
Why did you do this? Jorge looked from Edric to me, his eyes hard and angry.
You two humiliated the royal house of East Iridia. It was time you learned a lesson.
So you tried to kill Edric? I said. What kind of lesson was that?
A good one, said Jorge, looking smug. I thought of it myself.
I hadn't noticed that the crowd had parted from my father until I heard him say,
Arrest that man!
The captain of the guard led the way as three of his men hustled Prince Jorge off the field. While the men-at-arms herded the crowd back to the stands, Edric turned to me.
What just happened? Why didn't that lance kill me?
Remember that token I gave you? I asked. I put a health and safety charm on it. The air was knocked out of you when you fell, but Jorge couldn't do any real damage to you as long as you carried that scarf.
Edric frowned. I thought it might be something like that.
Here, take it back, he said, reaching into his armor. It isn't a fair fight if I have an advantage.
But Edric, Jorge wasn't trying to fight fairly. He wanted to kill you.
And now he's under arrest and we don't have to worry about him, do we?
Promise me you won't ever do anything like that again. I don't want you to use magic for me unless you ask me first. Do you promise?
If I have to, I said.
But I don't think it's right. I was only trying to keep you safe.
I know, he said, kissing me on the tip of my nose. And that's why I'm not really mad. Just don't do it again. Understand?
Yes, I grumbled. Edric's fall had shaken his mother so badly that she insisted he quit the field for the day, nagging him until he agreed. Then, complaining of a headache, she went back to the castle to rest, taking Bradston with her. Since he was no longer participating in the jousting contest, Edric removed his armor and took his mother's place in the seat beside me. The jousting contest was far from over, although the rest felt like an anticlimax to me. Before any more knights met on the tilting field, my father had them all come before him with their helmets off.
Just so we know who's here, he said.
The only surprise was the Black Knight. When he took off his helmet, he was a stranger to everyone except Edric and me. It was Prince Garrod, the vampire we'd met in Hazel's time. I gasped and sat forward in my seat.
Garrod, what are you doing here? I asked.
He smiled.
Hello, Emma. You don't know how relieved I am that I finally found you. I've been waiting for you for years.
For me?
I asked, confused.
Actually, I've been waiting for Lil, but I knew I'd find her only if I could find you. She told me about a lot of things, including this tournament. That's how I knew when to look for you.
But why?
I knew that vampires were immortal, yet trying to find a particular bat after all those years didn't seem to make much sense.
Because I realized that Lil was my one true love. I never married Hazel or anyone else. No one could compare with my Lil.
Lil? Who's that?
Asked my mother. A friend of mine, I replied. I met her shortly after I met Edric. Mother frowned, her expression changing to one of astonishment when she realized what kind of friend Lil might be. I'd made a number of friends when I was a frog, and they'd all been animals. "Does she live around here?" she asked, looking at me suspiciously. "Up in my tower," I said. "Garrod, if you'd like to go see her, she's taking a nap in the storage room right now."
"In the storage room?"
Mother echoed, her face turning pale. I pointed at the castle. "It's the tall tower on the right," I told the prince. Grinning, Garrod saluted me and left, his armor clanking all the way across the field. My mother tugged on my sleeve.
"How will he get into the tower chamber? You always keep that door locked."
"He'll find a way," I said, glancing at the tower windows. It wouldn't be any problem for a bat.